Iran summons Slovenia's ambassador in Tehran to protest the presence of the country's prime minister at a gathering of the MKO terror group. Palestinian Foreign Ministry urges the UN Security Council to oblige Israel to abide by international and humanitarian laws regarding the situation in Gaza. And hot weather alerts are in place for more than 30 million people across the western United States as the region is witnessing its highest temperatures ever. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Appreciate you being with us. First story takes us right here to Iran, which has summoned Slovenia's ambassador in Tehran to strongly protest the participation of that country's premier at a virtual meeting of the Mujahideen al-Khalq terrorist organization. Iran's foreign ministry condemned Prime Minister Janis Jansaz's anti-Iran remarks during the meeting as false, unacceptable, and undiplomatic. The ministry said supporting a terrorist grouping violates the UN Charter and international norms. The ministry had earlier called the meeting a circus. Tehran said the presence of figures like Jansaz and former U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo there was a shameful hypocrisy by the West. The three-day meeting began in Paris on Saturday. Now, the MKO has killed thousands of Iranians in its assassination and bombing campaigns since the 1979 Islamic Revolution.
The Mujahideen al-Khalq organization was founded in the 1960s. The group started the blind assassination campaign of Iranian citizens and officials after the 1979 Islamic Revolution in a bid to overturn the Islamic establishment and control the country. They also conducted dozens of bombings across Iran. Out of nearly 17,000 Iranians killed in different terrorist attacks over the past four decades, about 12,000 of them have fallen victim to the group's acts of terror. Former Iranian President Mohammad Ali Rajai and ex-Prime Minister Mohammad Javad Bahonar are among those killed in the MKO terror attacks. The group is also responsible for a massive blast targeting the headquarters of the Islamic Republic Party on June 28, 1981 in Tehran. At least 72 senior Iranian officials and lawmakers, including then Judiciary Chief Ayatollah Mohammad Ali Beheshti, lost their lives in the bombing. The MKO is also behind the failed assassination attempt on the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, in 1981. During a war launched against Iran by former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein in the 1980s, MKO members were armed by then the Iraqi regime and prepared them to fight alongside Baathist forces against the Islamic Republic. Despite all crimes committed by the MKO, it is not currently listed by any Western country as a terrorist organization. The European Union and the U.S., that often claim to be against any form of terrorism, rather removed the MKO from their lists of terror organizations in 2009 and 2012, respectively. Ever since, the West has changed its stance toward the MKO, propagating it not only as an Iranian opposition group, but misses no chance to fund the group and lobby in its favor. The MKO throws lavish conferences every year in the French capital, Paris, with well-known American, Western, and Saudi figures in attendance as guests of honor. Some of these figures who attend these events include former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton, former Mayor of New York City Rudy Giuliani, former Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper, and former Saudi spy chief Prince Turki bin Faisal al-Saud. The MKO is currently based in Albania, where it enjoys freedom of activities despite being involved in taking thousands of innocent Iranian lives and plotting terrorist attacks for decades.
The Palestinian Foreign Ministry has urged the United Nations Security Council to pressure Israel to abide by international law. In a statement, the ministry condemned the continued blockade of the Gaza Strip, which has sabotaged the lives of over 2 million Palestinians. It said the Israeli siege on Gaza blocks efforts to stabilize the truce that ended the regime's 11-day deadly aggression on the coastal territory. Earlier, a UN official warned that the situation in the Gaza Strip is deteriorating at all levels, and increasing Israeli blockade will lead to a new round of violence. Israel has imposed a land, sea, and air blockade on the Strip Since 2007, the UN has been asking for the lifting of the blockade for years. Meanwhile, the reduction of fishing areas in the sea of the Gaza Strip has led Gazan fishermen to protest Israeli restrictions imposed on fishing. Palestinian fishermen can barely make a living due to the inhumane Israeli blockade on fishing areas now for 15 years.
Scores of Palestinian fishermen staged a protest against the ongoing Israeli violations against them in the Sea of Gaza. The Israeli siege imposed on the fishing area for 15 years has deteriorated the lives of Gazan fishermen who are dependent on the fishing industry and has badly affected Gaza's economy.
The raw materials required for repairing our nets and boats are not allowed to enter Gaza. This has deteriorated the condition of most fishermen in Gaza. For 15 years, the Israeli regime has intended to close down fishing zones in fishing seasons.
The fishermen syndicate in Gaza organized a protest in Gaza's port. There was also a press conference aimed at highlighting the Israeli abuse against fishermen, namely opening fire at them, arresting them, and droning fishing boats.
I lost my brothers and I lost my money and my source of income as the Israeli regime bombed my boat in 2014. And here I am, participating in this protest while human rights groups turn a blind eye to what is happening to us.
During the latest Israeli offensive on Gaza, Israel closed the sea completely. Since the end of the onslaught on 21st May, Israel has opened the sea for fishermen only for 6 miles, which is not enough for fishermen to get enough fish to help them make money or even provide enough fish for consumers.
The inhumane Israeli blockade has restricted our work for 15 years now. Most of fishermen now lack fishing nets and equipment due to the closure of borders. The Israeli regime is trying to destroy the Palestinian income by any means. The occupiers intend to make us isolated and restrict our daily work.
Under the Oslo Agreement, the fishing range was 20 miles. However, over the years, the Israeli military gradually reduced this range, severely damaging the livelihoods of thousands of fishermen. The humanitarian situation in Gaza is worsening due to the Israeli blockade, which is taking its toll on the life of 2 million Palestinians. Fishermen here in Gaza call on the international community to pressurize Israel to end these restrictions that threaten their daily lives and make it hard to maintain any source of income. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
A senior member of the Palestinian Fatah movement has called for the expulsion of the United Arab Emirates from the Arab League over its normalization of ties with the Israeli regime. Abbas Zaki also called the Abu Dhabi Crown Prince and the Deputy Military Chief of the UAE, Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan, a traitor. He warned that the UAE would be unable to stop the Zionist movement once it opens the door to award citizenship to Israelis. Zaki hailed the spirit of the Emirati people and said that they would never accept such a betrayal. He was reacting to a report that the UAE has granted citizenship to some 5,000 Israelis over the past 3 months. The UAE and some other Arab regimes normalized their ties with Israel, brokered by former U.S. President Donald Trump last year. Now, the move was slammed by Muslims worldwide, with Palestinians calling it a stab in their backs. A prominent international rights group has revealed new details about torture of high-profile political detainees and women activists imprisoned in Saudi Arabia in 2018. In a report, Human Rights Watch quoted an anonymous prison guard as describing the torture methods Saudi interrogators used against prisoners. That included electric shocks, violent beating, whipping, and sexual harassment. HRW says it obtained a series of text messages from the guard detailing horrendous treatment of detainees committed in front of him and other staff. The accounts were from the Dabhan prison north of Jeddah, and another location the guard identified as a secret prison. HRW Deputy Director for Middle East and North Africa, Michael Page, says the new evidence further exposes the Saudi regime's disrespect for law and its failure to credibly investigate rights violations.
New evidence alleging Saudi Arabia's brutal torture of women's rights advocates and other high-profile detainees further exposes Saudi Arabia's utter contempt for the rule of law and failure to credibly investigate these allegations. Letting abusers off the hook sends the message that they can torture with impunity and never face accountability for such crimes.
Page noted that Riyadh should be held accountable for the crimes committed inside its prisons. Now, the kingdom has for long been accused of torturing activists, including women. In 2019, HRW and Amnesty International urged authorities to allow an international probe. However, the Saudis refrained from doing so and later claimed to have conducted their own investigation into the torture allegations. Well, Yemen's Mine Action Center has defused a large U.S. bomb in the capital, Sana'a. Observers say the operation proves that once again the U.S. is playing a key role in leading the current devastating war on the impoverished nation. Our correspondent in Sana'a, Abdul Latif Al-Washali, reports.
After 2 months of digging into a depth of more than 20 meters, Yemen's Mine Action Center managed to defuse one of the largest U.S. bombs dropped in Yemen's capital, Sana'a. The bomb was expected to target the civil defense building in Sana'a.
This GBU-24 bomb from the Paperway series was dropped in 2015 to target the civilian defense building in Sana'a next to Al Thara Park and Al Hasaba local market. The Saudi-led coalition has been using various types of advanced American weapons in its war on Yemen. This is a clear violation of the international humanitarian law.
Observers say this bomb is another proof of the U.S. military support for the Saudi-led coalition's war on Yemen.
We defused a GBU-24 bomb with a weight of 1.5 tons. The bomb targeted this hangar designated for the maintenance of Yemeni civil defensive fire trucks. The explosion of the bomb could have caused a humanitarian catastrophe with great consequences. The U.S. has provided only a few countries, including Saudi Arabia, with such a bomb.
Over the past years, Saudi Arabia has used internationally prohibited weapons, including the U.S. bombs, to target residential areas across the country. Back in April 2015, Riyadh committed one unforgettable crime by bombing the Attan area with a U.S. cluster bomb, killing more than 100 civilians, including women and the children. The American bomb dropped by U.S. aircraft is yet another witness to Washington's role in the war crimes in Yemen, as the U.N. turns a blind eye to such violations. Besides the military support, Yemenis say Washington has always been backing Saudi Arabia politically as a major ally in the region. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Well, thousands of Bosnians have gathered at a cemetery to commemorate the 26th anniversary of the Srebrenica massacre. Ceremonies were followed by the reburial of 19 newly identified victims whose remains were found in mass graves. They were laid to rest at a memorial cemetery at the entrance to Srebrenica. The Bosnian Serb forces systematically killed more than 8,000 Bosnian Muslim men and boys in 1995 after they captured the eastern town. It was the worst massacre on European soil since World War II and was deemed genocide by international tribunals. Now, the killings took place under the order of Ratko Mladic, who was then leading the Bosnian Serb forces. Mladic, known as the Butcher of Bosnia, was captured in 2011 after a decade on the run and has already been given a life sentence for his role in the massacre. Beijing has lashed out at the United States for blacklisting several more Chinese entities over alleged human rights abuses. In a statement, the Chinese Ministry of Commerce said Washington's addition of 23 Chinese entities to an economic blacklist amounts to a serious breach of international economic and trade rules. The ministry added that the U.S.'s move is, quote, an unreasonable suppression of Chinese companies. It underlined that Beijing will take the necessary measures to safeguard China's legitimate rights and interests. The development comes amid an ongoing trade war between the two countries, which have been at loggerheads over several issues, including tariffs on imports. Political commentator Andrew Leung believes the United States' anti-China policies showed that it is trying to turn itself into a global hegemonic power.
There is a great power rivalry, not only in trade, but in technology, on the ideology, on the military in the South China Sea, and on human rights, including Taiwan, Xinjiang, Hong Kong, and on values, the democracy against so-called authoritarianism. So it's a great power rivalry across the board, 360 degrees. Now, this latest episode reflects in the eyes of Beijing and continuing inability for the United States to think outside the box, in the sense that somehow the United States still clings to its perception of world hegemony, as if it can call the shots on all matters and over all countries. But this the times have changed in the sense that the American hegemony is in decline. Not that American power is in decline or its economy is in decline, but its hegemony is in decline in the sense that it can no longer call the shots on everything. And it has got to share power with a rising China. And sooner rather than later, the Chinese economy is going to exceed the United States as the largest economy in the world.
And with that brings us to the end of this World News Bulletin. Thanks so much for staying with us.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsetodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsetodayEnglish.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear listeners. Thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of The Lantern here on IRIB English Radio. One of the reoccurring themes within the narrations of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam and the luminous verses of the Quran is the theme and topic regarding forgiveness and all its derivatives. With that said, let's listen to a short and interesting story regarding this matter, and we're going to be right back, so stay with the lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear brothers and sisters, dear friends of this program, Lantern, so welcome. We have an interesting story for today, so let's see what's the title. True Forgiveness. Yes, that's the title of today's story. True forgiveness involves forgetting, letting it go, and moving on. While I was away on a business trip once, I received a call from one of my managers who wanted to resign because of how he was being criticized by his immediate superior. I asked him to hold off. He said, "I'm resigning." He then opened up a Pandora's box of experiences, complaints and feelings, including even stronger ones from his wife. As I genuinely listened, the negative energy in his expression was dissipated, and on his own, he agreed to visit with me as soon as I returned. When I returned, he brought his wife to my office, and they were pleasant on the surface. But as soon as we began to discuss the real issues, gushed forth. I continued to listen until they felt understood, and then they became very open. I then taught them about the space between stimulus and response, and how the greatest harm is not in what people do to us, but in our response to what they do to us. So I continued listening until other issues were expressed and understood, including how these issues at work had affected their own marriage and family life. It was truly like peeling off the layers of an onion until you reach the soft inner core. More negative energy was released until they were extremely open to the whole idea that no one can do us any harm without our consent, and that our chosen response is the key determiner of our life, that we are a product of our decisions, not our conditions. They were very humbled and agreed to think about it. He later called me on the phone and said that he had come to see the wisdom of the principal. We discussed and accepted it, that he had gone to his boss and asked for forgiveness, that his boss was literally overwhelmed by this expression, that he in turn had asked his forgiveness, and that it had restored their relationship. My friend said to me that he and his wife had reached such a point of accepting the space between stimulus and response and the power of choice that even if they had been rebuffed in their sincere seeking of forgiveness, he was determined to stay on and make a success of things as best he could. Yes, he who forgives you out of love takes upon himself the consequences of what you have done. What you've just listened was written by Stephen R. Covey from the book The Eighth Habit.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
To dispersing forgiveness and giving forgiveness to our fellow brothers and sisters, either in faith or in humanity, there are numerous ahadith that encourage us to do so unconditionally, in fact. unconditionally. They don't tell us that, oh, if someone comes and asks for your forgiveness, make sure that they meant it when they said they're sorry. Make sure they make it up to you. Make sure they promise not to make that mistake ever again. Make sure they understood that they were wrong. Just, there's a hadith, I think, from Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam that says, if my brother in faith, comes and curses at me in my right ear, goes for a walk and comes back and asks for my forgiveness in my left ear, I'd forgive them. The hadith is either from Imam al-Baqir or Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. That's the intensity of the situation right there. Not that much time lapsed from when that person supposedly insulted me in my right ear. Just a while after, for whatever the reason, they decided to ask for my forgiveness. And the thing about it is that maybe that person did not deserve my forgiveness, but I deserve to forgive. Sometimes, even if I don't get closure and I didn't get the apologies that I really deserved. Why? Because I deserve to let go of everything that weighs me down and burdens my heart. I deserve to create that closure for myself and move on from this unfavorable period and state in my life. I deserve to grant my own heart peace, reconciliation with myself, and with ease, with peacefulness, with comfort, and let go of any grudges that's constantly ripping apart the wound that time and the universe and Allah's grace is trying to heal. Every time I think about someone who wronged me and the way they hurt me without apologizing, without even feeling the slightest bit of remorse, it's like I'm pouring acid on that blister, and I am delaying my recovery. I'm delaying my own healing, because it's all up to me at the end of the day. Sure, I don't have control over other people's actions and how they treat me, but I have control over how to respond, how to retaliate, what to make of it, how to feel about it, and how to let go. I owe myself this much, not to hold on to things that not only don't serve and benefit me, but damage my well-being and peace of mind. That is why forgiveness is so important. It's good for everyone. It's good for that person who, through my forgiveness, might be given the chance to correct themselves, because obviously you can't fight fire with fire. The whole world will burn down. You gotta fight fire with water. If a person is a blazing flame of malice and misconduct and ill manners, you gotta fight it with the cooling water of peace and forgiveness and understanding and compassion. So not only is it good for that person, it's really, really good for me as the forgiving person. And it will make me deserving. It will open the doors of Allah's mercy to me. It's a win-win situation for me when I choose to forgive. When I choose to place myself in the auspicious and bountiful circle of forgiveness. When I choose to be on the giving and receiving end of forgiveness. I give it to others, and I receive it from myself and from my Lord. And that's when the real healing and growth begins. That's all the time we have for today's episode of The Lantern. As always, I thank you for being with us. And until another greeting, I leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Thank you.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah. ألا بذكر الله تطمئن القلوب.
In the limelight.
Having unleashed an unrelenting war via arsenals of mass destruction, which resulted in the death of thousands of innocent people and compounded by the displacement of thousands more, in addition to imposing regime change, the American mission, far from being accomplished, ended in disaster, says Iqbal Jasad Ryder in an article published under the heading, America's Crusade in Afghanistan Ends in Tatters as U.S. Troops Flee in Dead of Night. Stay tuned for more. In a strange coincidence of fate, a key architect of America's ill-fated so-called War on Terror, Donald Rumsfeld, died on the eve of the departure by stealth of U.S. troops from Afghanistan. 2 decades of lies and fabricated propaganda accompanied by gung-ho media coverage to justify the invasion and occupation of Afghanistan are finally being unraveled. Though Rumsfeld and his cohorts of war criminals, who comprised of neocons and diehard Likudniks within the Bush administration, may have strutted about like peacocks, their project was doomed from the beginning. Having unleashed an unrelenting war via arsenals of mass destruction, which resulted in the death of thousands of innocent people and compounded by the displacement of thousands more, in addition to imposing regime change, the American mission, far from being accomplished, ended in disaster. The discredited war on Afghanistan, in addition to being illegal, was deceptively authorized by the United Nations. An ill-gotten green light to bomb Afghanistan to smithereens in pursuit of Osama bin Laden, falsely accused of 9/11, was obtained through calculated deceit. And the propaganda which emanated from the White House and Pentagon generated levels of anger, hysteria, and vengeance, which drove allies led by Britain and France to turn America's so-called war on terror into a global frenzy. Not only did it turn into a colossal disaster for the impoverished nation of Afghanistan, but it also resulted in body bags draped in the American flag for families of U.S. troops to bury back home. Truly an orgy of bloodletting in pursuit of a redefined American dream to impose its imperial hegemony at any cost. So, as Rumsfeld is interred, his misdirected ambitious project in collaboration with fellow war criminals from Bush to Blair to subdue Muslims and Islam lies in tatters. It is no exaggeration to suggest that the so-called war on terror and language associated to rationalize America's hostile military aggression has been experienced by Muslim victims as a war on Islam. Between 9/11 and today, America has wreaked havoc across Muslim lands, from Afghanistan to Iraq and Syria, While steadfastly protecting, funding, and arming the Zionist regime's genocidal policies against Palestinians. Now that America has been unmasked yet again as a serial perpetrator of war crimes, it has evacuated its troops from Afghanistan, deceptively under cover of darkness. Conceal their inglorious fleeing, the manner in which American troops fled Bagram Air Base outside Kabul in the middle of the night, saw them shutting off electricity at the base before slipping away. Associated Press captured U.S. cowardice as follows. The U.S. left Afghanistan's Bagram airfield after nearly 20 years by shutting off the electricity and slipping away in the night, without notifying the base's new Afghan commander, who discovered the Americans' departure more than 2 hours after they left, Afghan military officials said. Rumsfeld's dead body may not be witness to the futility of 20 years of savagery inflicted upon an entire nation, but his accomplices will certainly rue the day they hatched evil plots to expand America's military-industrial complex, which today lies in ruins in Bagram. Bush, Blair, and NATO's belligerent leaders would be looking aghast at U.S.-trained Afghan troops surrendering en masse to the Taliban. Many more who expressed resentment against America for being betrayed fled to neighboring countries seeking refuge. The unreliability of Uncle Sam has been a bitter lesson for those who collaborated with the U.S. Army against their own. Costly experience for having reposed misplaced faith in the army of an imperial power. It is noteworthy to be reminded by author Nathan Lean that the so-called War on Terror, launched by President George W. Bush in the immediate wake of September 11, 2001, incited Islamophobia to a large degree and posited a demise of the American political right and the general population alike the idea that Muslim-majority countries, not the least of which was Iraq, were suspicious and dangerous. Afghanistan thus featured as the theater to launch a crusade in America's so-called War on Terror. Crusade language is repeatedly used to frame the war as just and necessary to eradicate so-called terrorism. Now that the invaders have fled with their trails between their legs, it finally allows the Afghan people to rebuild their country and their broken lives without the presence of a foreign army causing mayhem and havoc.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is for a better life.
فرمود باعث تو لأتمم مکارم الاخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم, brothers and sisters. You are listening to IRIB English Radio, and here is Batul. Welcome to the program for a better life. In our previous sessions, we asked this question, that what is a better life? Then we came to the conclusion that a better life is when a person is happy. This happiness is not the material happiness, but it is the happiness of the soul. So how can I reach this happiness? The answer is when I become a better person. Therefore, to have a better life, I need to be a better person first. How can I become a better person? In the very first session, we said that the first step to become a better person is yaghda. Now, what is yaghda? Yaghda means to wake up. Wake up from my deep sleep of negligence. Wake up from ghafla. Now, what is it that makes me ghafil? What is it that makes me negligent? What is it that stops me from becoming a better person? Ayatollah Jawadi Amali explains it beautifully. In his book, he says, he talks about these two terms called Aqul and Fuzul. Now, what is it? Aqul is where one uses his Aql and looks inside himself. Then he looks outside. Whereas Fuzul is when someone does something extra. Insan-e-Fuzul is someone who always looks outside himself. In Farsi also we have this term, brothers and sisters, fuzul. That is when someone gets nosy. We say, fuzuli nakun, don't be nosy, mind your own business. In Arabic, in the book of fiqh, we have a term called ahde fuzul, where I marry someone to someone else without their knowledge. Or let's say I sell someone's goods to someone else without their knowledge or without their permission. This deal is void if the people involved disagree. It's because this person did something extra. Now the question is, how does someone get fuzul? Someone gets fuzul when a person thinks that he is perfect. He has no flaws. He prays in time, he fasts, he bent for Hajj, he gives khums and zakat. So, he is good. then he starts looking into other people's flaws.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
He tries to look for the defects. He is always probing into other people's lives. He becomes a fuzool. For example, let's say I see some sister and I say, you know what? I went to Karbala with her. We shared a room. She does not wake up for Salatul Fajr. Or I say, you know what? That sister who wears perfect hijab at the center, but when I see her in Costco, she had no hijab. So what am I doing? I'm doing fuzuli route now. I'm looking into other people's lives. And when does this start? It starts when I think I am the best. I am a perfect Muslimah. I am the perfect Mu'mina. I am the perfect believer. That is why I need to mind my own business. Shaitan will make me feel good about myself. He will say, you are doing very good. My nafs will get proud. And then I start poking into other people's life. So it is always good to have badgumani, that is bad thinking about myself. Think that I am a sinner. And if I keep looking for my faults, then I will be away from many, many sins. I will be away from ghafla. I will not be negligent. Imam Ali alayhi salam tries to awaken us in his sermon 222 of Nahj al-Balagha. He says, O man, what has emboldened you? That means what has given you the courage to commit sins? What has deceived you about your Allah? And what has made you satisfied with the destruction of yourself? Is there no cure for your ailment? Or no awakening from your sleep? Do you not have pity on yourself as you have on others? Generally, when you see anyone exposed to the heat of the sun, you cover him with shade. Or if you see anyone afflicted with grief that pains his body, you weep out of pity for him. Let me give you an example here, brothers and sisters. For example, when I see a paralyzed person who is bedridden, I cry over his plight. I feel sorry for him. But then I forget that this can happen to me too. Today I am healthy and I can walk and talk. But God forbid, one day I can fall into the same situation like him. We have to remember that. Imam continues. He said, what has then made you patient over your own disease? What has made you firm in your own afflictions? What has consoled you from weeping over yourself, although your life is the most precious of all lives to you? Why does not the fear of an ailment that may befall you in the night keep you wakeful, although you lie on the way to Allah's wrath due to your sins? Sometimes, brothers and sisters, While looking for defects in others, we go so far that we forget that this person is a creation of Allah. For example, when I'm looking for a match for my son, I forget that Allah is the best of the creators. He's Ahsan al-Qaliqeen. I talk of the defects of the girl. I go like, oh no, she's too short, she's dark, or her nose is too big. Without thinking that I am looking for defects in Allah's creation. Whatever He created is beautiful. Who am I to look for defects which I think are defects? Imam Ali said, Inna Rabbi wa Habli qalban aqula wa lisanan sa'ula. My Lord has granted me a heart that is aqul and a tongue that is sa'ul. Qalbi aqul is a heart that thinks with wisdom, and lisanan sa'ul is a tongue that questions a lot. It asks whatever it does not know. So, brothers and sisters, let us pray to Allah that we are aqul and not fuzul, insha'Allah. Wa akhiru da'wahum anil hamdu lillahi rabbil alameen.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. So I need. So I need. All I need. Love is all I need.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via Internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.